You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The Arab states of the Persian Gulf are six oil-rich countries: Oman, Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. And they are joined together in the Gulf Cooperation Council, known by the initials GCC. Ruled by emirs and a sultan, these countries form the tightest concentration of ruling monarchies in the world. When protests in Bahrain began to seriously threaten the monarchy there, Saudi Arabia and other GCC members sent military to help crush the uprising. To discuss the Arab awakening in the GCC countries, we contacted Saeed Ranima. He is a professor of political science at York University, and he writes and comments regularly on issues pertaining to the Middle East. I spoke to Saeed earlier this week, and here now is the interview. In Bahrain, demonstrations grew very large before being brutally attacked by the Saudi Arabian and other GCC troops that came in to assist the Bahrain monarch. What is the current situation in Bahrain?
Well, the current situation actually is worse because not only the Sheikh have attacked, you know, and they are suppressing all of the those people who have been in the street. But even there, now they have moved to the hospitals, you know. Now they have, in a sense, put so many security checks in different hospitals that anybody who is injured or who has been beaten or shot who comes to the hospitals, they try to get their information from them, or even they detain them. Now, so there has been lots of objections on the part of the medical staff and also international community that this is against human rights, this is against Geneva Convention, and they are not supposed to do this, but they are doing it. And even many people who are being injured are not going to hospitals, and so that endangers their life much more seriously. So this is how the situation is. At the same time, of course, the minority Sunni ruler, they try to see whether they can appease the majority Shiis, and also they try to come up with some promises for housing, for financial support. But of course, we know that these are all temporary measures. Is exactly the same manner that in Saudi Arabia, the king, as soon as there was some revolt in the Sharia in the eastern provinces, which have a sizable number of Shiis there, they started distributing money. You know, billions of dollars was distributed in order to silence the population. So this is what they are doing. It is, as you mentioned in your introduction, you know, the whole system, not only in Bahrain, but also throughout the whole GCC or the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, these are extremely suppressive regimes, authoritarian regimes, and they're very backward in terms of political system, despite the fact that they are using the highest technologies. You know, they are creating so many big cities, centers of banking, etc., etc.
Aside from Bahrain and to some extent Oman, you mentioned certain section of Saudi Arabia itself, but the rest of the Gulf states seem to have avoided the degree of popular protest that has spread throughout other Arab states, particularly in North Africa, Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, and in the Eastern Mediterranean, Syria. How would you explain this?
Well, the reason is that, first of all of these countries, the six members, all of them, in terms of their day-to-day operations, productions, construction, and others, they are heavily reliant on the immigrant workers. And the size of the immigrant workers are as such. So the minority locals, they enjoy lots of privileges. For example, to give you an example, first of all, for United Arab Emirates, almost over 70% of the population aged 15 to 15 and above are non-nationals. So over 70% are non-nationals. Anybody who wants to have any business in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi, and others, they have to find a local as partner, and that partner should be a majority holder, so they should be 51% of anything. And this does not apply only to new industries, banking, you know, agribusiness and others, but also to smaller businesses. So, I mean, I myself talked with somebody who had a small boat, you know, carrying some passengers, two or three, to the other side of the water. And I asked him about whether he owns it or not. He said, no, I cannot own it because 51% of it should be with a Dubaian. So this is how the system works. The majority of locals, they have lots of privileges. In Kuwait, the situation was so bad that even Kuwaitis were not supposed to stand in line, queue, you know, going to cinema, you know. So they go right in front of the booth and get their tickets. They have improved it a little bit, but the situation is as such that you have the vast majority, in some cases, a minority who is doing the working, and then the locals have lots of benefits, and that's why they are not revolting against themselves. Despite all of these things, still there are people, you know, we've got the new generation who wants to see some changes. They are different from and they are fed up with the brutal dictatorial regime that their parents, their fathers particularly.
In Saudi Arabia, it's the largest oil reserves in the Gulf. It's the largest purchaser of U.S. military equipment. Can there be change in the Gulf without change in Saudi Arabia?
No. It's a very good question. Saudi Arabia is the biggest by far, although, you know, nobody knows exactly what is the population of Saudi Arabia. This is one of the state secrets. They say it's about 26 million, but I mean, probably it's a bit smaller than this, because they don't want to show they are so rich, but at the same time they are so small. About 6 million of these are non-nationals. Well, Saudi Arabia is an extremely, brutal state in terms of political repression, and it is a mingling of religion and politics and tribal leadership, you know, which is a unique feature of all of these six. You know, these are tribal societies, and there is a hierarchy of tribes, and then in Saudi Arabia. Historically, as you know, it's a merger of a religious family of Abdul Wahhab, which later developed into Wahhabism, which is one of the most fundamentalist of Islamist interpretations. They merged with the Saudi family, and now that's why you have got this merger of these two. It's very hard to reform it. It's extremely conservative. And of course, the rest of the sheikhdoms, smaller ones, Oman, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain, UAE, these are all reliant on Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia also has enormous income from the pilgrimage of Hajj, you know, Mecca. So it's extremely rich. It's got lots of money. That is why Wahhabism, which was extremely insignificant in the past, and historically even was wiped out by the Ottomans, now it has come back. Not only is the dominant religion of Arabian Peninsula, but even you can see it in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in many others, and ironically it's becoming dominant in Muslim communities in outside Canada, outside these countries, including Canada, in United States, in Europe, because of the power of oil and money. So that's why Saudi Arabia is so powerful.
The GCC countries supported, along with the Arab League, the NATO attacks on Libya. Given the ruling groups in the GCC are suppressing their own democratic movements, why would they be seeking to strengthen popular struggle in Libya?
Well, because none of them liked Gaddafi, you know. Gaddafi was, is, you know, a type of character that, as he always used this expression, putting his fingers into everyone's eyes, you know. Gaddafi did not have, was not a good friend of these Arab sheikhs, and they never liked him. So that's why they were ready to support the initial calls for no-fly zones. But by no means this applies to what is happening in their own vicinity, for example, in Bahrain, one of their own members, or Yemen, which is not a member of GCC, but it's in the peninsula. So they are not using any of these powers or international supports for these countries.
Even though you said Saudi Arabia is very stable in a sense that other countries have reliance on immigrant labor, that the local population is quite benefits from this exploitative system, do you see ways and places in the Gulf where popular struggles might grow?
Well, eventually, yes. Eventually, no authoritarian regime, no totalitarian regime can last long, you know. We know that as a rule. But it takes time, and also it depends case by case. I think Saudi Arabia would be the last to go, you know. I mean, because in order to have this, you know, you have also to have advanced or highly developed or relatively developed civil society, you know, which is very weak in Saudi Arabia. And it takes time. But at the same time, now you've got the women's group who demand more rights. And, of course, this is so sad, you know, the type of rights that they want is that the right to drive a car, you know, or travel, you know, if they want. In Saudi Arabia, the situation is so terrible, particularly for women, you know. Women, there are elderly women who do not have a husband or a man in the house, and in a sense, they are not registered, you know. They cannot go out, they cannot buy things. So this is the tragic situation, while Saudi Arabia is stable, but it is mostly and definitely because of Americans. All of these Persian Gulf sheikhdoms, you know, the GCC, if you put all of their power together, militarily, financially, everything, they cannot survive without American support. So it's mainly the American policy that keeps them like this. And Americans have lots of interests in the region. I mean, oil is number one. Then there are, of course, the geopolitics is another significant factor. Persian Gulf, Sea of Oman, you know, Red Sea. These are all major strategic naval routes for American Navy, who is very much involved in the wars in the Middle East.
There's one contradiction, perhaps, I'd like you to comment on, if it is or it isn't. Al Jazeera, as a television network, has played a quite critical role, is generally regarded, in its reporting and as a catalyst for the Arab awakening in the Middle East. And yet, Al Jazeera is owned and funded by one of the GCC monarchies in Qatar. How can one explain this apparent, anyway, contradiction?
You're absolutely right. It is a contradiction. You know, you've got Qatari regime, who was extremely totalitarian, authoritarian, but at the same time creates this amazing network, you know. We have to differentiate between Al Jazeera International, you know, which is in English, and then Al Jazeera Arabic. The Al Jazeera Arabic, of course, is more conservative. The Al Jazeera International, you know, they are competing with giants such as BBC World or CNN and other international networks. They are doing an amazing job. There's no doubt, you know. Al Jazeera English channel is a very important source of information that you don't get in other places, so I admit that. But at the same time, never, even in this one, in the English one, you would see any critical analysis of Qatar, you know. So there are competitions also. The English channel is also very critical of Saudi Arabia, and it's very open, but not Qatari system. So that's safe. There is a contradiction, but I think they are doing a very important job, you know.
You've been listening to Saeed Renema. He is a professor of political science at York University, and he writes and comments regularly on issues pertaining to the Middle East.